Right now on the show, let's talk cricket and something of particular interest for anyone who remembers those great test matches of the 1970s. We're joined by Mark Peel, who's written several books about cricket. His latest is a biography of Derek Underwood, who played in many of those matches that I was talking about in the 1970s. And Mark Peel joins me now. Mark, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Not at all. My pleasure, Martin. Thank you.
So why Derek Underwood? Why particularly? I mean, you're probably one of the few people to have written a biography of Derek Underwood. Why him and why particularly now?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I happened to grow up in Kent during the 1970s, and so I was privileged enough to watch an awful lot of Derek bowl at Canterbury and Folkestone and all the other Kent grounds. And I had also the privilege of meeting him on three or four occasions. And he always struck me as a very humble person, given his incredible achievements. And, of course, sadly, he died last year. And I thought that, you know, there'd never been a biography written of him, and now was the time to do one. So I spent most of last summer going around talking to his friends and family, and very interesting it was too.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lower profile than a lot of the players that we're talking about in the 1970s and some of the achievements. You know, they got more recognition, really.
Sure. Yes. He was a very humble, modest person, not the kind of person who would push himself forward, didn't particularly enjoy he was always very kind with the press, generous with his time, but it wasn't really his kind of thing. And I suppose in an age of controversy, as the 70s were, apart from him joining Packer, which in itself was a very difficult decision for him, he wasn't a controversial person. And certainly talking to his friends, this very much came through. The word that was so often used was he was the real gentleman of cricket. And I suppose those kind of people don't naturally attract as much publicity as the Bothams, the Greggs, the Chappells, whatever.
Yeah, and if we're talking about, certainly talking about Packer, which changed the whole architecture of cricket broadcasting at the time, we have to talk about the difference between being a cricketer, you know, the financial difference between being a cricketer then and being a cricketer now. The focus was, you know, they needed to make money because there wasn't that much in county cricket.
Absolutely. I mean, Derek Underwood, even at the peak of his England career, was earning perhaps, you know, £7,000 a year. And that is counting all his England appearances and tour money. And yes, it is true that he had a successful benefit in the 1970s. But, I mean, cricketers weren't even, your average cricketing salary didn't even meet the working man's average wage of the time. And, of course, compared to other sports like tennis and golf and football, they were derisively small. So, I mean, the Packer affair really pinpointed, you know, one of the real problems of English cricket at that time.
Yeah, for people who don't know what happened, it was in Australia, wasn't it? And it was a breakaway, and it was all about television.
Absolutely. Kerry Packer was this fairly tough Australian media mogul who wanted his Channel 9, Channel 2 broadcast, have sole television rights for the Australian international home series, which the Australian board were very reluctant to give him. And so consequently, he decided to challenge them by setting up his own sort of World Series international cricket, which undoubtedly caused absolute mayhem and headaches to the cricket establishment. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, it changed the way it was televised.
Because absolutely.
I can remember, a few of our listeners will be old enough to remember when the BBC covered it from just one end, you know, behind the bowl.
Yeah, so. Yeah, indeed. And, you know, the sort of kind of coverage, whereas the BBC had been pretty deferential to the game and, you know, reluctant to criticise umpires or others. That was not the approach of the Channel 9 broadcasting team. I mean, they were in there, you know, they said it as it was. And it was all part, I suppose, of an attempt to meet the tenor of the times with a less deferential, more assertive, more contentious kind of cricket, which undoubtedly did appeal to a lot of people in Australia.
Yeah, and tell me about Underwood as an actual cricketer.
Yeah.
I mean, who would you compare him to in today's game, and what was particularly distinctive about him as a cricketer?
Well, that's a very fascinating point. And I suppose the honest truth is that there is nobody, I don't think, who you could compare him with precisely. Tony Locke, probably Jim Laker's spin partner of the 1950s, would be the nearest, because he wasn't a typical spinner in the sense that he was sort of slow medium, and a lot of people would say he would cut the ball rather than actual spin it. There is a healthy debate about that particular issue, but he you know, bowled slow medium, and on, of course, the uncovered wickets of that time, on rain-affected wickets, he was absolutely lethal because of the speed with which the ball came through and the lift that he got on those wickets. And he gave the batsman absolutely nothing, even on a dry wicket. I mean, accuracy was very much his watchword, and he hated it if he was being scored off. Whereas, you know, the classic kind of spinners of the time, say someone like Bishan Bedi of India, was quite happy to toss the ball up and go for a few runs in order to tempt the batsman into destruction. Whereas Underwood hated that kind. You know, he wanted to tie the batsman down and sort of almost ball them out, you know. So I think he was really unique, actually.
Mm. But he also a controversy. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, going on that Packer, the circus, as some people called it at the time, you know, the World Series cricket, sort of haunted him a wee bit. And that was a controversial decision.
It did, absolutely. Yeah. I think for people like other English players, like Tony Greig, who obviously had a large part in sort of shaping it and expanding it, and Alan Knott, it was a no-brainer. They were more than happy to sign up to, they felt that the game needed a shake-up. Alan Knott wanted his wife on tour, which was unpopular at the time. For Derek Underwood, I think it was a much more complex decision, contentious decision, because he loved playing for England. And he hated controversy. And in the end, what took him there was, you know, the financial security for his family. Mm. He'd recently married. His second daughter was on the way. Because in the words of his wife, Dawn, he probably otherwise wouldn't have done it.
And, I mean, even more controversially, in 1981-82... he joined the England Rebel Tour to South Africa. That, again, presumably a financial decision, but, you know, given what we know about the history, it was very controversial.
Yes, it was. You're absolutely right. It was very controversial because this was much more raw politics. I think for Underwood, though, that the decision to join the South African Rebels was a much easier one than the Packer one, because by 81 he was coming to the end of his England career. He'd just been on a rather unsuccessful tour of India, and frankly, I like most sportsmen, he played in South Africa before. He didn't have the sort of kind of moral objections which somebody like Mike Brearley would have had. And he was able to take the family with him. Yes, financially, it was a pretty easy, you know, gig. I mean, it was 1 month for £45,000, you know. But, of course, it did arouse controversy, not least, again, from the Kent Committee. And had the legals bit been on their side, they probably would have cancelled their contracts then, he and Alan Knott and Bob Woolmer. But having gone into all that over Packer, and of course lost that case. So they thought twice about it. So he was able to continue to play for Kent. But yeah, no, undoubtedly it was controversial.
So it's sort of similar to footballers going out to Saudi Arabia at the end of their career. It's that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing to say is that the tour did not bring about the kind of bridge building that maybe they deludedly might have thought it was. So it was a bit of a black mark, a taint on his career. But I guess, unlike Packer, most cricketers didn't object to it.
But as you say, deadly on the pitch, the book's called deadly, particularly on weather-affected pitches. And despite all the controversy, a gentleman off it.
Yes, absolutely. I think that perhaps is the great paradox of his career, that somebody is so pleasant and gentle. I mean, John Shepherd, his good friend in the Kent side, said the thing about Derek was that he was a gentle soul. And as I say, he didn't like a controversy. And it's worth pointing out also that he played the game entirely, you know, to the highest of standards, and that he would never sledge the person. He would not dispute umpires' decisions. He had a great respect for his fellow professionals. But that said, you know, he was highly competitive, and indeed deadly, as the record shows, 2,500 wickets, 297 at Test level, and considerably more had he not lost those England years to Packer.
Mark Peel, author of Deadly, the first biography of Kent and England legend Derek Underwood. Mark, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Not at all. My pleasure. Thank you very much indeed, Martin, for inviting me.